Hello, and welcome to the first ever episode of Lead into Gold, a podcast about how alchemy became chemistry and all the funny things that happened in between.
Hello, I am Fia. I am a chemistry major who's graduating in a semester, so that is my qualifications. I'm super interested in and have done a fair bit of research into the history of chemistry and alchemy. I have several years of experience working in undergraduate research, but you will have to forgive me if I do not give specifics on that for the sake of keeping my professional life off the internet.
And I'm Evie. Hi, I don't have any qualifications. I don't know anything about science beyond what I legally had to learn in high school to graduate. And my reason for being here is that I'm funny and I don't know things, so I will have hopefully very funny reactions to learning things.
We're going to talk about alchemy and chemistry.
Mostly Thea is going to talk about alchemy and chemistry, and I will nod along and be very impressed by how smart they are.
You won't be able to see the nodding, so just know that she's nodding.
Spiritually, I am.
So before we get started, I want to drop a disclaimer that I will be doing everything in my power to reference a variety of sources, but as a person who speaks English and reads a little bit of German, I have had some issues finding good sources on the history of alchemical thought in China and India. Hopefully one day we can do some full episodes on alchemical concepts and contributions from non-Western countries, but I do want to focus on the things that I have reliable sources on and feel qualified to speak on. I'm having much more success incorporating Islamic thought into my research because there's a lot more of that that's been translated into English or that papers have been written about, but if I miss anything important, please feel free to contact me and let me know. I love to learn more. So, as we get started, we gotta define our terms. What is alchemy? Do you have an idea of what alchemy is?
Hang on. How's the Full Metal Alchemist intro go? It is the, oh God, I can't remember it. Turning alchemy. One thing into another thing. Is that it?
That is a significant part of it, yes.
All right, I'll take it.
Say it's understanding, deconstructing, and reconstructing matter, and that is specific to that show. That's not the historical definition. So alchemy is the field of thought that led into modern chemistry. Somewhere around the Age of Enlightenment is when it flip-flopped, but it's hard to define because it came into being at a point in time where the line was thin to non-existent between things that were science and things that were philosophy and things that were religion. So I'm actually going to read off the definition from Roger Bacon, my personal arch nemesis, because he also started off saying we should define this before we start talking about it. He says, alchemy is a corporeal science simply composed of one and by one, naturally conjoining things more precious, knowledge and effect, and converting them by a natural commixture into a better kind.
That still sounds like changing things into other things.
A certain other saith, alchemy is a science teaching how to transform any kind of metal into another, and that by a proper medicine, as it appeareth by many philosophers' books. Alchemy, therefore, is a science teaching how to make and compound a certain medicine, which is called elixir, the which is cast upon metals or imperfect bodies, doth fully perfect them in the very projection.
That is so many words.
It is so many words. And that is a small part of the words that I had to read before we recorded this, just a small chunk of them. But yeah, basically, his definition, alchemy is, the goal is to take things that are not perfect and make them perfect. And okay. So throughout history, there were a variety of approaches to this. Some religious, some scientific, some with mixing in chemicals, some with feeding people things, a lot of different approaches. And all of those tended to focus on two goals. And those goals comprised the Philosopher's Stone, which is what we're talking about today. Two goals of the Philosopher's Stone, they were to change base metals into higher metals, silver and gold.
So that's lead into gold, that's what that is.
Lead into gold, yeah. And they were to, the other goal was to create an elixir of eternal life. Now, the thing that's important to understand is that these, we got into a little bit with the bit from Roger Bacon, these are inherently connected concepts because the belief was that the base metals, not just lead, but lead was, that's the most well-known in popular culture, also things like mercury, iron, the belief was that these were lesser, not just from a scientific perspective, but not just from a value perspective, but on a moral level. These are not as good, and we want to make them into better things, like silver and gold. Not just gold, that's another popular misconception, silver was also gold, although it wasn't quite as good as gold.
So we want to make the shitty, sinful peasant metals into nicer, shinier metals.
Exactly. And so really the goal was the same for both things, was to take something that's not very good and make it something very good. Changing things, changing their nature to where they're better. Changing our bad human form into one that's perfect and lives forever. Changing our stupid iron into precious silver.
All right. I feel the need to point out that gold is real and immortality is not.
That is correct. Well, yet, there's still time. We're working on it.
That's fair, that's fair. But at the time of all this, it was very much not. Life expectancy was not great.
Very true. Like I said, there's again a lot of mysticism and spirituality about this. It's actually, you provided a wonderful segue into talking about how these goals were reflected in different cultures. Because, like, as I mentioned, a huge part of this mysticism, spirituality, religion. Gonna toss another disclaimer out here. I've done my best to research properly for the belief systems that I'm not personally familiar with. But if I make any mistakes, particularly with regards to Buddhist, Hindu, Taoist, or Islamic thought, again, don't hesitate to reach out to me and let me know so I can correct it. There's a lot to learn. So the segue you provided, we can start in China, because the Chinese, unlike most other cultures, when Chinese alchemists, mainly those inspired by Taoist thought, were trying to achieve perfection, 99% of what they were doing entirely focused on immortality. And some of the sources I read suggested that this is because, unlike for the Europeans who were in majority Christian, unlike those who were Islamic or Hindu, Taoist thought does not believe in an afterlife or in some form of eternal life. And so the focus for them was that we don't have anything after death, so our focus is to live longer. It's much less important to find riches when you're gonna die and it's all gonna go away anyway.
Sure, who gives a shit about gold? We gotta dodge that oblivion.
Exactly. And this is unfortunately another one of those situations where I know this much. I can't really point you to any names of significant Chinese alchemists because I don't read Mandarin or Cantonese or anything like that. My sources are limited. And as for Indian thought, that was much closer to the European thought at the time, with the focus on both creating gold from base metals and from extending life and finding immortality. The term that I found was Rasa Shastra for Indian alchemy. And it's still a term used today in Ayurvedic medicine, which is an alternative medicine system that was the medicine that was used in India for a long time and is still believed in by some. Yeah, so texts from the 10th century indicate that they had the same goals: eternal life, creation of gold from base metals. Once again, I don't read Sanskrit, so my sources are limited here. And then we move west, where I have many, many sources. In Europe, we were a bit more interested in the gold.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. Of course.
So one of the very first goals of European alchemists was the transformation of base metals into gold. Fun new vocabulary word for you all, chrysopoeia. Chrysopoeia. I looked up how to pronounce it and listened to a video and I still fucked it up. Chrysopoeia. Changing base metals into gold. That was the goal.
I had an entire word for it, damn.
Yeah, because there's a whole Wikipedia page on it. They're something people have wanted to do for a very long time. And the thing about doing this and on all of these is that there is a root in this belief that it's possible in how people think the world itself is built together. And this is part of where we start to see the roots of what would become chemistry. People know that there's something that makes up the world around us, and that, you know, you look at things and some of them have the same things in them. And nowadays we know that those are elements that make up the things around us. That's like as small as you can get before you can't like break it into different kinds of things.
The world is made of stuff, groundbreaking.
The world is made of stuff. I mean, it was groundbreaking for alchemy.
As opposed to before that, when we weren't sure if it was made of stuff. Could have been made of just nothing.
I mean, we don't know. At the very beginning of alchemy, we thought it was made of like water, earth, fire, air, and ether.
Ah, yes, ether. Looking out my window, I see a lot of ether out there right now.
So the belief in European thought was that metals were made from the same things. They just had different ratios of those things. So if you melt it and then you re-solidify it and then you mix it with things and then you purify it enough, you'll change the ratios of the things that make the iron and you'll get the ratio that makes it gold.
Okay.
Right?
You're the chemistry major here. You'll have to tell me if this is complete bullshit or not, because to my idiot ears, like, it kind of makes sense.
I mean, there's a reason they pursued it for as long as they did. It is complete bullshit, but if you don't know better, it makes sense. Iron is an element. It's on the periodic table. It's actually, I'm going to go pull it up so that I can... Aha, iron is number 26 on the periodic table. Gold is way over at 79. So they are very different. They have different numbers of protons, electrons, neutrons, things like gold, mercury, lead. They're different elements. So you cannot change an element into a different element by melting it and by mixing it with other things. You might get something that looks like it if you mix other things in, but that's 99% of the time going to be because you didn't just have iron when you started.
You started melting it,
and then there was also some gold in there because things appear in nature weirdly. But it would not surprise me if some of them got just enough gold from impure samples that they thought they were doing something they weren't. So every time you go back through the sources that I've read where they have instructions for trying to make the philosopher's stone, for trying to change lead into gold, it's the instructions are things like melt it down, solidify it, stir it over the heat for 36 hours, add more sulfur, add more mercury, because that's, for a large portion of time, the belief was sulfur and mercury were the two things that made the world.
So basically, no matter what you try, you just take iron and you just get more fucked up iron at the end.
100%, yes. Sometimes you get more poisonous things. Sometimes you
take
mercury and then you get more fucked up mercury and then you feed it to somebody and you say it'll make you immortal and then they die.
This is a very specific example.
We're going actually back to, I believe, China with that one. There's a lot of theorized famous Chinese historical figures who probably died from mercury poisoning. So the first mention of the Philosopher's Stone was by Zosimos of Panopolis, who was a Gnostic philosopher from the 4th century CE. He is the oldest source of many of the alchemical concepts that we still have record of, and we will definitely be mentioning him again in the future. He cites a lot of other alchemists in the excerpts that we have of his writings, but we don't have anything that was written by most of those alchemists. Some of them are very cool people. Several women, and we're definitely going to get into that in another episode.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Now we get to mention one of my favorite characters, Hermes Trismegistus.
All right.
We don't know if he was a real person. He's
What an introduction. Here's one of my favorite people. He may not be real.
See, the thing about Hermes Trismegistus is that he's like this... There was a whole like religious cult around him.
And all right.
When I say Hermes Trismegistus, this is not a man who was named Hermes after the Greek god. This is, we took the Greek god and we made him an alchemist figure.
Okay.
Yeah. So Hermeticism was the system of beliefs. And I don't know, it's probably not fair to call it like a cult. It's right in that place where religion bleeds into philosophy, bleeds into mysticism, bleeds into things that it's very blurry when we get to these points. But there is a piece of writing that is attributed to Hermes Trismegistus known as the Emerald Tablet.
So who was doing the writing if this was maybe just like another identity of a Greek god? Who was doing the, was there a guy that...
We don't know. The Emerald Tablet is really old. And it's referenced in a lot of fiction because the belief was that if you could figure out what it meant, it was instructions to make a philosopher's stone.
All right.
And I have here, if you would like me to read it, it's about a paragraph. I can read you Roger Bacon's translation of the Emerald Tablet.
So,
kind of instructions that they were working with when they were trying to create this.
All right.
It is true without leasing, certain and most true. That which is beneath is like that which is above, and that which is above is like that which is beneath. To work the miracles of one thing. And as all things have proceeded from one by the meditation of one, so all things have sprung from this one thing by adaptation. His father is the sun, his mother is the moon, the wind buried in her belly. The earth is his nurse. The father of all the telesme of this world is here. His force and power is perfect if it be turned into earth. Thou shalt separate the earth from the fire, the thin from the thick, and that gently with great discretion. It ascendeth from the earth into heaven, and again it descendeth into the earth, and receiveth the power of the superiors and inferiors. So shalt thou have the glory of the whole world. All obscurity therefore shall fly away from thee. This is the mighty power of all power, for it shall overcome every subtle thing and pierce through every solid thing. So was the world created. Here shall be marvelous adaptations whereof this is the mean. Therefore am I called Hermes Trismegistus, or the thrice great interpreter, having three parts of the philosophy of the whole world. That which I have spoken of the operation of the sun is finished.
Okay, that just sounds like a chain of like really pretentious riddles.
Pretty much.
Like, you know, like, I have no eyes and yet I see, like that sort of deal. Like, I have no evidence for this, but like, I feel like a strong suspicion that this was written by just like some dude trying to seem smart.
Honestly, I wouldn't question it. But these are the instructions that all of these ancient alchemists, some of whom came up with scientific concepts that we still use today, this is what they were working with when they were trying to do things that aren't even possible. They were just poring over this and seeing things like separate the earth from the fire, the thin from the thick. And so they'd like melt down iron and ore or lead or mercury. I don't know why I keep fixating on iron. That wasn't even the most common. They'd like melt down lead and they'd say, separate the thin from the thick. And so they'd be like, now we have two chunks. And then we move this one away and then we melt this other one.
Now we just have less lead.
Now we just have less lead and we sure don't have any gold. So that is what European alchemists were working with.
All right.
That I read you, Roger Bacon, as I've said, and that is from the 13th century. So like 1260-ish.
Okay. So this is all, I am losing all my grasp on history along with my non-existent grasp of science. This is all like pre-Renaissance.
Yes, I believe so. I don't know when the Renaissance was.
I think it's like 1400s.
Okay, then yeah, that would be. Yeah, because this was like 1200s. And so that is where science is at in terms of chemistry. People just they're trying to do this stuff. And then we hit the 17th century and the 18th century and the Age of Enlightenment happens. And there's a whole bunch of cultural stuff that I don't know anything about because I'm a scientist. I try. But this is when alchemy begins to give way to chemistry. And this is where I have no choice, but I have to talk about Robert Boyle and his book, The Skeptical Chemist. He published it in the 1600s, and it was just the foundation of our modern understanding of like what elements are. I could gush about Robert Boyle for a very long time, but Boyle's Law is still something we teach that I've learned in several of my classes.
This is your science crush, right?
Yes, this is my science crush. It's a very good book. And so this is about the time period when people start to like learn about how chemistry actually works. And we're starting to figure out like, okay. And we move into modern times and chemists are like, yeah, okay. We're not going to make an elixir of life. Nowadays, when doctors are researching, they're like, we're going to cure specific illnesses. We're not trying to make some panacea cure-all elixir of immortality. If someone tries to sell you a cure-all, it is snake oil. We're trying to make people live longer by curing.
Oh, that was a hell of a slip.
We're trying to make people live longer by killing them.
That's what those guys who were eating mercury were doing. I mean, they had that solved all the way back in China in the 1200s. Not sick anymore.
Nowadays, we try to make people live longer by curing what's wrong with them, not by just making them magically live longer.
Okay, so like, was there a point where they just like stopped calling it alchemy and started calling it chemistry, where they're like, wait, all that old stuff was kind of bullshit, we should start over? Or did they like...
I don't actually have the specific date on that, which probably should have been the first thing I found before we started recording this show about alchemy turning into chemistry, but there you go. There was a point where we pretty much stopped doing alchemy And we're like, okay, we're scientists now, it's chemistry, we're professionals, we don't feed people mercury. And you'd think that this is pretty much where the story of the Philosopher's Stone ends, wouldn't you?
I would think so, given that they aren't trying to make it anymore. Are they?
Haha. So we continued researching the elements because we're trying to understand the world around us better, but we've never really forgotten like our roots in alchemy. There's chemists have a lot of fun with it. And usually we're joking around and we're like, oh, look at us. We're alchemists. We're doing our fun mystical things. You know, look at us take this video of our bubbling pipes in lab. And I'm going to share that on. Okay, I'm just calling myself out here. I take pictures of to share it on Snapchat because it makes me feel like an alchemist. It makes me feel cool.
Look, sometimes you just got to pretend to be an evil wizard a little bit. That's like part of the
hierarchy. Exactly. What's the point of studying chemistry if I can't pretend to be an evil wizard?
Exactly. You deserve that.
I do. I work very hard and I've earned it. But here's the thing. How much do you know about radiation?
It is in a lot of things. Sometimes it is very dangerous and makes a lot of people die. And nuclear power is a thing. That is most of the limit of my knowledge.
Fair. So what radiation is when atoms are coming apart. And when you, there's different kinds of radiation, and I'm not particularly well versed on all of them. I'd have to like reference something to list them, but it's like alpha, beta, gamma radiation, and they're different kinds of particles, and you get them when atoms are changing and decaying. And so they'll spit.
Oh, wait, I know. Okay. I know some of this because some of this is a half-life, right? That's like.
Right.
Dating things.
Because half-life is how long it takes for an atom to split off parts of it and then turn into a different kind of atom. Elements.
Okay, so now we are at things changing into other things again.
Elements do change into other things. Mercury, gold, those don't really. Or if they do, it takes such a long time that it would be, you know, astronomical. But things like uranium decay pretty quickly. Polonium. There's a few on the periodic table that have half-lives of like, I want to say nanoseconds, that synthesize in the lab and then it just turns into something else because it's radiating, it's spitting off bits of electrons, protons, neutrons. And the other important thing you have to understand before we continue with this is the difference between elements. The thing that separates an element from another element that we as humans have decided and that is reflected in what we see and understand in the world around us is how many protons there are in the atom. If it has one proton, it's hydrogen. If it has two protons, it's helium.
Okay, I did learn this in high school chemistry.
Yes, always good to review though, and very important for continuing. So when we have something with a half-life that changes into something else, that's when it's emitting the kind of radiation that it's losing protons. So elements do change into other elements. And of course, the scientists who discovered this and were learning about what research is doing, they made that connection back to alchemy because that is our roots and it's pretty cool. Like things are transmuting.
Sure. Hundreds of years later, we're back at things changing into other things, except it's real this time.
In 1924, Professor Hantaro Nagaoka, which I've probably mutilated the pronunciation on and I apologize, at Tokyo Imperial University published results of an experiment in which he and his coworkers, in essence, ran an electrical current through mercury and were supposedly able to isolate gold from the results.
Was that true?
Concurrently, Professor Adolf Mietha at Berlin Technical High School reported similar results in a slightly different context, which I'm not going to get into the details of. I'll post the article link with all the sources for this, but it's very complicated and not really relevant. But as of 1999, the results had been thoroughly tested for both of them and were not found to be replicable. The theory is that they had impurities in the mercury that they used for their experiments and that they were just finding the gold that was mixed in.
So we really are full circle because that's the exact thing you were talking about earlier with those dudes in the 1200s with their lead.
However, in 1941, Drs. Scher, Bainbridge, and Anderson of Harvard University successfully transmuted mercury into several radioactive isotopes of gold by bombarding it with neutrons and basically knocking a proton off the nucleus. If you look at the periodic table, mercury is number 80, gold is number 79. So that's gold has 79 protons, mercury has 80. They hit the mercury with radiation until it lost one, and we made gold from a base metal.
All right.
We have done it. Chemistry has accomplished half of the Philosopher's Stone.
So transmuting into gold actually is possible, so long as you have enough radiation?
Yeah, there's more research even to this day on it because it's scientifically fascinating, but it's obscenely expensive to do. Rich off of this. You have to have like seriously fancy equipment, but it's scientifically fascinating and historically super duper cool. That is where the history of the Philosopher's Stone hits today. Is that was the goal of alchemists for centuries, and we hit the point where we learned enough about the universe that to a certain extent we can do it.
All right, yeah, we can do that. Now, how are we doing on the immortality front? That sigh was so telling.
You would have to talk to doctors about that one. That is no longer the purview of chemists.
Chemists said, okay, we're taking the thing of this that is possible, the thing that isn't, doctors can worry about it.
Exactly, not our problem anymore. I guess if you're a biochemist, it's sort of your problem, but I am not. Not my problem.
Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Lead Into Gold. We're both really excited about this project, so your support means a whole lot. Follow us on Twitter at L2GPodcast, and if you'd like to contact us, you can do it at leadintogoldpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts. I hope you'll join us next time, where we'll be diving into the wondrous alchemical world of water.
Although, have they actually done lead into gold, or is it just mercury?
Just mercury, because lead is like 82, and so it's, I don't think we've done lead, although I'd have to double check again, because it's like another couple past mercury, and so it's, mercury into gold is not catchy though, and nobody.
That's true. No, definitely.
Nobody cares about it.
Meanwhile, everybody knows lead into gold. We got to have some mass appeal.
Exactly. Mass appeal. Like the mass of the atoms.
That was not on purpose.
But it was good.